Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to another Retro Rahalastapa. This week, with a man I've collaborated with over many years. First met in probably 1991. Arguably, he's gone on to have a more successful comedy career than me, but that's just that will take a long time to debate. And I created his most enduring character. It is, of course, Stephen Coogan. Sometimes known as Steve Coogan. And this is a lot of fun, this one. My main memory of this is that the other guest that night was Sarah Pascoe, doing actually one of my favourite podcasts, so we must have her one put up for the Retro Rahalastapas as well. And maybe we'll do that next week. I can't remember who was first. I probably... And it might have been Steve first, so that might be quite interesting. But my main memory was Steve had no memory of meeting Sarah Pascoe, but he had once. Sarah Pascoe later told me he tried to chat her up. So in the past, and he'd forgotten. So you know, there's a little bit of backstage gossip to excite your peccadillos while you listen to this. He's absolute genius, comedy genius, of course. I don't need to tell you that. Wonderful to get some sort of background info on where he gets his crazy ideas. And the idea of these podcasts is really to try and highlight some classic episodes for people who are new to the podcast or people who've been here for a long time and, like me, have forgotten everything that's happened in these old ones. And it's also a great way for you to introduce new people to the podcast. If you would like to, that would be nice. If you have a friend who you think might enjoy this podcast, send them a few of these classic episodes. And hopefully that will whet the appetite for more and they'll listen to all 400, 500 podcasts on this stream. And that is very good news for us as well. So the more people who listen, the more money we'll have to put into making more podcasts. And we do have some plans for some extra stuff coming up either later this year or next year. So let's sit back, relax and enjoy this Retro Rahalastapa with saucy little cheeky Steve Coogan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who yesterday ran 13.1 miles and is slightly stiff. Please welcome, nothing to do with the running. Please welcome Richard Herring. Still got it, so thank you. Hello. Hello, lovely to see you all. Thank you for coming. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahelastapur. Lots of cool kids in today. I did the Royal Parks Half Marathon yesterday, which last year I did in 2 hours, 37 minutes and 41 seconds. This year I did it in 1 hour, 47 minutes and 9 seconds, which was 50 minutes faster. So that's... look at me still... I'm really, I don't know why I'm doing that. It's just, once I got off stage, I'm going to be very upset with myself for jumping around so much. That is, to say, it's not really fair to say I did that because Me Too did run the race. So that is, he did very well. It's 8 minutes off. That's 8 minutes off my personal best from 10.5 years ago. That is ridiculous. I'm a young man. I'm never going to die. That is definitely the case. He couldn't. This is our 50th podcast that we've done. So we've got a very special guest to celebrate that. It's not just a coincidence. I won't mess around too much because I wanted to talk to him, really. But yesterday, after I'd run the half marathon, I watched the film, which I haven't seen before, The Wolf of Wall Street. I don't know if anyone's seen The Wolf of Wall Street. I tell you, it's one of the worst werewolf films I have ever seen. You see, it has you in suspense, think, when's the werewolf going to turn up? This is, because I tell you, it's full of absolute cunts. Every single person, they've set up brilliantly. You think, well, who's going to, I mean, I don't know which one I want to die first. I can't wait to see him have his throat ripped out. Maybe that little dwarf's going to turn into a werewolf. That would be up to the woman who has her hair shaved off for 10,000. They're idiots, these stockbrokers. They don't know how to eat sherbet at all. You eat sherbet with your mouth through a licorice stick, mate. Suck it up like that. You do not eat it with your mouth off of a lady's bottom. That is just weird. That is unhygienic way to eat sherbet. So please be careful with it. Okay, that's my Wolf of Wall Street material. I feel there was something else, but fuck it. Our guest today is a man who makes the Wolf of Wall Street's lifestyle. Look, excessive. As all of our lives do. He is best known, of course, as Tommy from The Indian in My Cupboard. Quite a controversially racist show. And he was also, of course, you'll remember him from his funny impressions he did in the W.H. Smith's advert in about 1990. That is what I remember him from. Will you please welcome Steve Coogan, ladies and gentlemen? Steve Coogan. Welcome. Sit down. Hello. Come on in. Steve, it's Steve Coogan. Right, you're all very excited, but it started well with Stephen Merchant as well, didn't it? So just let's not get over the top. What about the Indian in My Cupboard? What do you remember about playing Tommy in the Indian in My Cupboard? And who was the Indian in the cupboard?
It was called the Indian in the Cupboard.
Okay.
And it was actually a Native American in a cupboard.
Oh, okay.
That's
much better than...
It's a better title, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I played a toy soldier called Tommy Atkins.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the role you've specialised
like,
in.
I played a miniature person, yeah. And I decided after that I wanted to do more miniature people.
Yeah.
And Night at the Museum I also play a miniature soldier, so I've done the 4 miniature soldiers in films.
It's good to know that if they have that role, you can call on Steve Coogan and he knows.
Well, because Alan Partridge is successful, but you can't take anything for granted, so it's good to have something to fall back on.
Yeah.
So small soldiers.
Yeah. How did you... It was Octavius you played in Night in the Museum. How did you prepare for a role like that of being a tiny Roman...
Obviously, soldier? I visited Rome.
Yeah.
Went to the Colosseum.
Yeah.
Bought some ice cream. Closed my eyes and really imagined what it would be like to be a Roman centurion.
Yeah.
And, So, no, you just... That's really is... you really don't think when you play those. I mean, this doesn't make... It makes no sense at all. I have this English accent. I mean, really, I should be speaking in Latin.
Yeah. So, right. Although he isn't actually a Roman soldier. He's a representation of a Roman soldier. So he can do it however you like.
That is true, actually. He's supposed to be a small plastic Roman soldier that comes... I mean, once you've gone past that point of a toy soldier in a diorama that comes to life, I think you can more or less do what you like.
And do you remember the first thing I ever saw you in, and I thought you were amazing in, was the W.H. Smith's adverts, where your face, because you coming up going, Betty,
the thing is, because of YouTube, these things are sort of people put them out there. In fact, I sometimes go, I wonder if that's on you. Oh my God, someone's actually put that up. I did this W.H. Smith ad, and it was really, and I was very excited at the time because it was like it was television. Yeah. And it was me just doing various impersonations. And it had lines like things like me doing Tommy Cooper saying, this is about what's for sale at WH Smith, going, CDs, handos, things like that. Just really shit jokes like that. And then me as Paul Daniels going, hello, like I'm really small, because he's quite small.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty groundbreaking stuff at the time.
Stuck with that.
That was the turning point for me.
And then I met you in real life shortly after that, and
it was
like the actual bloke from the W.H. Smith server.
Yeah.
It was very exciting, because we worked together on The Hour.
We worked together on The Hour.
Yeah.
And we did The Dumb Show in Edinburgh. In Edinburgh in 1992.
Yeah.
You, me, Patrick Marber, Simon Munnery, and Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
And I remember Stuart Lee telling us off for messing about on the last night. Well, being quite cross, actually.
I don't remember.
Take it seriously.
Maybe if you'd done that on the first night, it would have been a good show.
Yeah.
Seems a bit late. It was kind of it was an amazing, you know, looking back.
It wasn't that the audience didn't find it funny. I just thought we were way ahead of them.
We were. There was some funny stuff in there, but it was a clash of personalities in some ways.
Yeah. Oh, did I say Patrick Marber? Did we mention Patrick?
I saw Patrick
was in it.
Yeah, Patrick.
Yeah,
but it was a clash between Patrick Marber and everyone else.
I knew which side my bread was buttered. I knew he could write comedy, and I wanted to write for me, so. And to behave myself.
It was mate, he chose the wrong person. But on The Hour, which sort of came out after that, because you won the Perrier Award that year with a different show, unbelievably.
Yeah. One thing is, I had my show I did with my northern friend, John Thompson, and then my show I did with my Oxbridge friends, who'd let me join their exclusive club with you and that lot. And that's right. And then after we did, but Patrick did direct my Edinburgh show.
Yeah.
He said, "Give me £1,000, I'll direct it." So a lot of money in those days.
It was.
And then we did On the Hour with Armando.
Yeah. Which again was another kind of thing. At the time, I think we didn't quite realise it was special at the time. But when you look back with Chris Morris and you. Rebecca Franz. Amanda Iannucci. Yeah.
I remember at the time when they were doing those sketches and I remember coming in the first day and reading some of those sketches and I'd done sort of very sort of comedy characters that were very orthodox or sort of very old fashioned in the comedy style. And when I met Armando, and also you and Stuart wrote these very surreal kind of sketches.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking they were so funny and really different and edgy. And I remember thinking, this is going to be big.
And it did. It was quite. And of course, at that time, I created the character of Alan Partridge.
Shall I clear this up? Yeah. Richard and Stuart wrote a sketch that said sports report presenter. Just said, I don't even say generic, just said sports presenter. And Armando said, can you do a voice? And I went, they all sound the same to me. They all sound a bit like this. And I did this kind of like voice like this, a bit like John Watson, but it was a bit like that sort of thing. And we did this sketch. And then, so in some ways... You could say that the first material I did as Alan was material written by you. But of course,
and therefore, we followed that through to logical conclusion.
And it was very, very surreal. But then after that, we thought, well, this is a good voice. Forget the material. How can we develop it into something three-dimensional and alive? And that's when Alan started to be born. Yeah.
If you give me £250,000 right now, we'll call it even. How about that? We won't go through the course.
I'm not charging you for tonight, so that's all that is.
You are getting paid £250 tonight.
It's all going to a controversial political cause.
So, I'm going to ask you an emergency question just to get us out of the slight tension that's been created mainly by me.
I like the tension. It's good tension.
It's good. It's interesting. Tension.
It's not funny, but it's dramatic.
It is. And that's what you're more into now.
That's right, I'm very serious now.
You are very serious now.
So if you're not laughing, it's because I'm choosing to be serious. Okay.
So you can answer this question seriously. If you had to choose between having sex with a man who was a 6-foot-tall penis with a face... or having sex with a man who, instead of having a penis, in the place of that, he had a very tiny man. Which of those two? You have to have sex with one of them. Which one would you have sex with?
Well, I mean...
It's a 6-foot-tall penis, but he's wearing a false shoulder suit, so he looks like a man.
Yeah, but the thing is...
He's got a face here.
Yeah, but he's an actual penis.
He's a six-foot-tall penis.
Well, that means that he's not got any details. He's just a penis. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking
Has the penis got a penis?
No.
Well, that's just... I mean, all I could do is just rub him up and down. You could... I mean...
You could insert your penis into his blowhole, as I believe it's called.
Yeah, but it's too... No, I couldn't do that. The other one is more interesting to me.
Yeah, okay.
What was he like? He's got a penis...
He's a man, but he's got...
Well, a small man. A small man effectively can function as a penis.
He can do. I mean, it would be a cruel way to treat him. I mean, in a way, he's like an Indian in the cupboard, isn't he?
When you say full sex, would I have to penetrate myself with the small man? Or could I just rub the man up and down?
You can do anything. I mean, with consent, you can do anything. But you would have to get the consent of the man and the tiny man as well. They're both together? Yeah. So if one of them said no... One person saying yes and one person saying no means no.
Obviously a discussion have to ensue about what was acceptable to both of them.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want to, force myself on either of them. I'd want if they're both in agreement. It's got to be consensual.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's good. talking of dicks, you were quite outspoken about Jeremy Clarkson, which was...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, which was quite a good thing to say. This was on his previous to last
aberration. Oh, yeah, they all had to go to Mexico. Well, see, what annoyed me about it was... what's doubly annoying about it was, I've been on the show 3 times, and even though I've done lots and lots of work over the last 25 years, if I'm in America somewhere or somewhere where I think, I might be recognised for something other than Alan Partridge, people come to me and say, hey, you doing any more Top Gear? and that's all they know me from is Top Gear. But I say, well, I don't think they're going to invite me back because I attack them for being racist. And they go, they're funny guys, aren't they? they are sometimes. But I actually said, I attacked them because I thought they were being racist about something. Yeah, they're pretty funny. Yeah, but I just think they're a bit racist. That's all. Yeah, but those guys are pretty funny, right? Well, the thing was, I wouldn't mind, but it's just rubbish comedy that they do. And what annoyed me was, because sometimes you think, well, there's no point saying anything about all this. But then what annoyed me was, they said, well, it's just people who've got no sense of humour that think it's offensive. I thought, so I said, would they have said the same thing if it had been Jews or Pakistanis, and because there's no big wave of Mexicans in Britain, they thought they could do it with impunity. It's like cowardly racism.
Did you choose the word wave there on purpose?
Yeah, because of Mexican wave. Oh no, you've discovered I'm a secret racist. So anyway, they They didn't, but that works. It yeah. works. Yeah. The wave thing.
It does. What do you know?
It works. So I had to go for, because I said, well, it stops, you know, I said, well, and they all think I'm funny when I'm Alan Partridge.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, if I say, I don't think you're funny, then they can't turn around and go, well, you don't know anything about comedy. And they sort of went, oh, well, blah. So, yeah.
They didn't stop them, though, did they? Because they've carried on with this.
I know. It's like, well, look, you know, it's billions of people think they're funny. But, you know, so I just go, one small person going, no, you're not. So that's all it is, really, isn't it? But they didn't ask me back.
No.
On the show.
But it's the. Because you like driving cars.
Yeah, I do like driving cars, but.
So it's the same kind of person as that. Does that worry you?
It does worry me because I'm a bit torn about it because I'm embarrassed about the fact that I like cars. It's a bit of an affliction. I sort of, on the one hand, because even though I like cars, everybody else who likes cars, I think, is a dick. Because they mostly are dicks. And when I buy a car magazine, I sort of hide it inside a porn magazine. I'm too embarrassed about it, you know. And if I'm on the train, I'll read it on my lap under the table because I feel like I don't because I think it's a bit sad.
Yeah, but do you take the train? You're taking the train home tonight, like a normal person would.
Yeah, I do. I said to you earlier, and if I go into the office, I do get the tube two stops, but. I was going home back to Brighton one night on the getting off the tube and going across Victoria to get on the train and this woman came up to me and said, I love that you use public transport. And I said, good, tell people.
Do people recognise you much? Is it in real life? Are you sorry? You're getting dripped on here as well. This happened last week. We should have really sorted it out. There's a
Is it actually literally dripping on?
There's some kind of awful cholera-ridden Ebola virus.
Okay.
Just adds an extra frisson to the... it's only on your side.
That's fine. So, what was the question?
Do people recognise you? Because obviously, like, you don't look... you look a bit like...
Well, I'm dressed as a teacher tonight.
You are.
For fun. I do and I don't. I mean, you sort of... You know, if you... thing is, if you... So what you do is you avoid eye contact and keep moving.
Yeah.
But also, if I can spot my demographic, like sort of men aged between 20 and 35,
right.
20 and 40, then I try and look the other way as I walk past them. But
is it sort of those? It's like those guys.
Yeah. yeah. That, those sorts of people. Yeah. I look the other way, but I do get recognised, and I just don't make a fuss. But people do. Sometimes I play a game where people, when they want to recognise you, they want to check that it's you. They sort of do a big. They walk around you in a big loop, and then they walk past you and sort of walk past you, and they sort of look up and go. And what I do is, if I've got a newspaper or something, as they try to walk around, I just casually turn the other way. So they go, oh, he's looking the other way now. I can't quite choose. And then they go around again. As they go around, big circle, and I casually turn my back on the way. Just for my own amusement. So, yeah. That's what I do.
Good. There's a bit we do quite regularly, which is I look at this. Have you heard of the website Britcom Confession, Dirty Britcom Confessions, in which comedy fans can go online and I think you'll like it, Steve. I think you'll enjoy it. And post their fantasies about British comedians.
Oh, I think, go on, yeah.
But they're generally quite weird and sort of witty. They're not generally filthy. And yours are, I thought they'd be filthier than they are. Mm. But here's some of the things people have said about you on Britcom Confessions. Alan Partridge's voice is the key to orgasm. Which, if that's true, that's orgasms.
Well, look, it's not that. Some people like people to shit on them. So that's quite, quite mild.
But that makes it sound like nobody can have an orgasm without you coming in and going, aha, at the end.
Yeah, it is strange.
It's a strange thing to say. This is someone... I think there's someone else that did a Santa-based one. I think it's the same... From the font, I think it's the same person, whoever the other week was. Dear Santa, I just want Steve Coogan with a ribbon around his penis. Would you be prepared to do that?
If it aided erection.
Yeah, well, it would hold.
Like a sort of a festive cock ring.
Yeah, it could hold it. If you get erect and then round the base.
And then sort of haul it like a sort of pulley system. Yeah. That'll work.
Okay, this one's quite rude. I admire Rowan Atkinson too much to have any dirty thoughts about him. So I'll just settle for him just to watch Steve Coogan banging me. Would you be?
That's quite nice.
Would
nice.
You be
it's
okay
flattering.
With that? But that also, wouldn't you be thinking, well, she doesn't respect, or she or he does not respect me enough to not want me to bang them?
Well, I'd rather be banging her with Rowan Atkinson watching us than Rowan Atkinson fucking her, me watching them. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
Rowan Atkinson has the comedic respect in that.
As long as he was watching it, he wasn't in my eye line. If he was behind my shoulder. But I don't want to be making eye contact with him, like.
Got quite a naturally funny face. I think it might put you off.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not erotic, is it?
Yeah. Oh, hello. Have you caveat?
I thought this one was a non-sequitur, but I think it makes sense. I want to go to Bolton Abbey with Steve Coogan.
That sounds like a metaphor.
It does. Yeah.
It's not, she literally means Bolton Abbey, which isn't in Bolton.
Oh, is it not?
No, it's in the north. But it's a
is
lovely
it like,
abbey.
There's a Leeds castle in the southeast. It's like that.
There's a Leeds castle. It's not in Leeds.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah. There's a long tradition of place of old buildings with place names that's not where they are.
And so, is this somewhere you went on the trip?
It is somewhere went on the trip in the first.
Did you do anything very sexy there with Rob Brydon?
Not really. No, come on. I mean, no. That's below the belt. That's sick. it was very nice. Very nice. Lots of. It's funny, isn't it? There's not because, of course, Henry VIII sort of destroyed all the abbeys, didn't he? With the huge act of vandalism by Henry VIII.
But they look nice now.
But they do. That's the strange thing is actually they're rather romantic as sort of those ruins. Yeah. Yeah. I think lots of buildings should be slightly half demolished, so that moss grow on them and stuff.
And basically, with Rob Brydon, the trip from, I haven't seen all of it, but what I can understand, it's sort of like this podcast, but you do it on the Amalfi Coast and stuff. That is sort of like two blokes dicking around.
Yeah.
We can do an impression off. I've got some impressions.
Go on.
So, I don't know what your Tam Dial's like. Can you do Tam Dial?
Oh boy, oh, I'm angry about something.
He might be Welsh. No, it's this bit.
He's not.
A keyword's me, a cup of water, and bookcase.
That's what it is. It's book, that's what it is.
Very good.
That is Scottish. That's actually all. That's the only one I can do.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good, yeah. He's. Go on. I don't know what to say about that.
No. Really.
But
I could be on instead of Rob Brydon. It could be you and me going eating.
It's not very complicated, to be honest with you.
No,
it's just we did one up north, driving around, eating in restaurants, talking, and then we thought let's do one in Italy.
Yeah,
driving around, eating in restaurants, and talking. So
do you have to eat the same meal like 8 times? For
yeah,
TV?
You do. The hardest thing is when you sort of serve at the same meal, and you have to. The hardest bit of acting actually is when. They want to do one more shot of them putting the full meal down in front of you, and there's two kinds of eating. If you're acting, because we're sort of supposed to be acting, we try and act within a sort of framework of like, I'll say this, you say that, then I'll say this, and then we'll see what happens. But when you eat with food, I think actors in films do two things. They either push the food around the plate so they don't have to eat it, or they really eat it aggressively, as if to say, look at me, I'm really eating this food. like gangsters and stuff do that, don't they? Like Sopranos, they sort of eat the food, don't they? It's like, as they're talking. But we would eat it because it was just so tasty. And then, of course, they keep serving it, and eventually, even though however tasty it is, you get full. And the hardest acting is when they put the meal down in front of you, and it's a full meal, and you're stuffed, and you have to go, that looks lovely. Because they say you shouldn't go to the supermarket on an empty stomach because you buy loads of shit. Well, the reverse is true, because I actually went shopping in this Booths, which is a lovely supermarket up north in Cumbria.
I know it,
And I had sausage and mash before I went shopping.
Yes.
And the opposite is true. I didn't want to put anything in the basket.
So,
oh, God, no. So, just an interesting observation. Thought you could work that into one of your routines.
Well, Funny enough, I gave Steve an idea for... I mean, there are actually some ideas of mine in Alan Park. By the way, there genuinely are. I think we've discussed it before. But before the podcast, it was raining, and I walked in my shoes. Steve gave me some advice. You have to be a monthly subscriber to find out what his advice was, though. But my socks got really wet, so I put... As I was putting them in the... I realised there's a dryer backstage, so as I was putting my socks in the dryer, Steve arrived from the backstage entrance, saw me putting socks in a dryer, which was quite embarrassing, and I said, you know, you could put this in one of your Alan Partridge scripts, couldn't you? A man put, and then you go, yeah, you go, sorry, I'm putting my socks in a dryer. You go, yeah, it's all right.
And then it went, very quiet, didn't
yeah.
it? A hush descended.
It did, because then it's embarrassing being caught putting socks in the dryer.
Yeah.
Just, you know,
I thought
about.
You would have some new thing, like the comic with bare feet.
Yeah, because I hadn't bare feet, but actually I thought, this is terrible, I've got really, this is just for you, the people here. I had really wet socks, so this is going to be terrible, I have to do the show in wet socks. But now I've got really warm socks. It was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life.
I thought it was like I've got a suit, so I'm a bit corporate, but yeah. I'm fucking it all up and being anarchic because I'm not wearing shoes. So that's the anarchic bit of it.
And it's another reference to earlier podcasts in the series. It's like Paul McCartney on the Abbey Road. He wears a suit and bare feet, and because he is dead, apparently. There's two bits in Alan Partridge that are based on me and Stu that Peter Bainham, who we may should talk about, stole.
Yeah.
Which is the bit where someone comes up to you and says, "Are you Alan Partridge? You've dropped your card, you've dropped your credit card, or whatever it is." That actually happened to me. It wasn't Alan Partridge. It was a you, Richard Herring. And I went, "Yeah," and I went, "Yeah, I am." And he went, "There's you've dropped your credit card." And Peter Bainham stole that from my life.
Oh right. He might have done that. He is a thief.
He is a thief. And the other one is when Alan Partridge goes to the fan's house and it's full of effigies of him and posters on the wall. That essentially happened to Stuart Lee.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
He went. Stuart Lee went to a gig. He got locked out of his bed and breakfast. There's a brilliant punchline to this as well. This beyond the joke. I've just remembered.
I hope so.
When I say punchline, I'm an extra.
An extra bit.
This guy who'd been at the gig drove and said, "Oh, we've got a spare bed in our house. Come and sleep there." So she said, "Fine." And then he got to the house and they didn't have a spare bedroom. What they had is a mattress on the floor of the living room. The living room had posters of Stuart Lee's, all of his shows
really?
Up, yeah. And the guy's flatmates were watching the porn version of Animal Farm in the lounge. So Stuart had to lie on this thing with posters of himself up on the wall. And years later, it turned out the guy who'd invited Stu back to his flat was the DJ Christine O'Connell. So I told you it was a great punchline to the...
Wow.
Who had posters. And then Christian O'Connell, who I've asked about this, says, "We had posters of loads of comedians up. It wasn't just Stu." That's quite scary. So that's you.
It wouldn't have sounded as good if Stu had said, "I stayed in this flat and they had posters of many, many people, some of which were me."
There was no energy, but there we go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So let's talk about the Leveson inquiry, because that was like all serious as well.
That was very serious.
It was.
Yeah.
But that's so you had your phone hacked.
Well,
or do you know for sure you did, or do you? Just...
Well, no, I guessed. Yeah. I guessed that I did because I had I looked at Glenn Mulcair's notebook because the police sent it to me because I asked them to, and it had lots of phone numbers in it and. Had the password to my phone account,
right.
Which is Ferrari, which I changed because I didn't want that getting out. Please don't tell anyone. I went along to Leveson to.
Have you changed it to boobs, Steve? Is that what it is?
Yeah, to boobs. Such an old-fashioned word. Not tits. That would be too rude. Boobs. So I did the Leveson thing. It was very funny because what they do is when they ask you questions at Leveson, they try to sort of catch you out a bit.
Yeah.
And what they do is when a lawyer asks you a question, they use the silence and hope that you'll fill the silence and sort of say something slightly incriminating. So they'll say, I remember this the guy who was doing sort of the cross examination said, "Now you say that you saw a." You say that, not Glenn Mulcair, this is the guy, Paul McMullen, who was one of these sort of rather feral-like journalists, and he said, you say that he was photographing it outside your house. Yes, that's right. How do you know this? He told me. He told you. Yes. I see. And just turned the pages, you've got to wait for you to fill in. And he said, and you say you saw someone rifling through your rubbish bins? Yes. How do you know this? I saw them. You saw them? Yes. What, you just saw them one evening? It was the morning. And then the other thing they did was he asked me about Piers. He said, you were interviewed by Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan says... I met Steve Coogan at one of these excruciatingly trendy London clubs. And I said, he chose the venue. and he got a big laugh like that. And he sort of went... And I was like, yes. Give me another.
So you've been through all of this and hacked off, which you're involved with. Their new rules have come in. Which is interesting because I write a weekly column, a humorous weekly column for the Metro newspaper, which is owned by the Daily Mail Group, which I didn't realise that before I started writing for it, but now I know. But because I wrote for them, even though I don't write, I just write stupid shit things that happen to me in my life, that I had to go in for a special seminar about... about it all, about the changes, and they were really, the man from the Daily Mail who took the seminar was really pissed off with Hacked Off, and he's talking about you all hacked off. I was the probably the only person in the room siding with you amongst all the Daily Mail. Was, they've changed everything. You've got to be careful, and you mustn't do this. So we now have to be double careful. We have to check everything that is true and stuff before we put it in.
Well, the thing is, they don't want things like they sort of claim what they do is they try and say it was that we're anti freedom of speech and all that. Of course, no, we're not. But so they say the one of the things they accuse of is we want sort of and also the reason I got involved really was it's slightly problematic because. Obviously, if someone like me gets involved, you go, oh, well, you've got an axe to grind because they said nasty things about you. And you go, well, no, it's not that. It's because actually, I don't like sometimes the way the newspapers behave. And I think that people who get fucked over by them should have a proper system of redress. Right? That's all. Just an effective system of redress. And so they ask, and that means the Dowlers, the McCanns, and all those other people, Christopher Jeffries, people that have all been abused. And you just want a system of a fair system of redress. But... we also want to protect public interest journalism. We want to enable it, to help public interest journalists. Yes. And it's just, sometimes it's like David and Goliath. Sometimes the David is the journalist. Sometimes David is someone who's being screwed over by the press. And one thing I've noticed is that all the people who scream about freedom of the press, the journalists who scream about freedom of the press, don't really say much about plurality. It doesn't bother them that their wages are being paid by Lord Rothermere or the Barclay brothers, if you write for the Telegraph, or all these people who own the newspapers. That threat to freedom of the press doesn't bother them, because those threats to freedom of the press pay their wages. Yeah. So they only get upset about people who basically want to complain about things that are said about them that aren't true.
Yeah. It is annoying. I wanted to put my hand out. It's annoying for me because I had to go to quite a boring 40-minute seminar, which, you know, at the end I just wanted to say, so what you're saying is, as long as I just don't... Should we just tell the truth from now? As long as we tell the truth, it will be okay.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because there's... And also, funnily enough, when I appeared before Leveson, I got sort of... Well, Hugh Grant got attacked by the Daily Mail the next day, and then I got attacked with it. And it's like, we're constantly being attacked, but now it's sort of the kind of... Once you... Paul Dacre, who edits the Daily Mail, is... Whenever I've appeared on TV, I've invited him to come along. In fact, I think we invited him to come along tonight, didn't we, Richard? But he always says no, because I always think of him as like the man in The Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain. You know, that's got a big booming voice that's the Daily Mail, yeah, going, boom, I am the Daily Mail. But really, it's just this little man behind the curtain pulling levers, saying, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So when you think of him like that, he stops being scary. But I mean, there's lots of different... The thing is about Rupert Murdoch is, he just wants to make money and wants his company to be able to make money unimpeded and write. And if that means writing nasty things, that's fine. Even if it means writing nice things, that's fine. As long as people buy newspapers, he's happy. He doesn't care why they buy them. Paul Dacre is different, because he's not just about money. He definitely believes all the horrible, shitty crap that he writes in his newspaper. He really does believe it.
Yeah.
And, I don't like bad language. I don't like talking about people in a disparaging way. But Paul Dacre is a cunt.
So... I'll try and intrude a bit on your personal life now. You often, when actors work together in films, there's like romance and, you know, stuff goes on. So I wondered, in Philomena, as I call it,
yeah,
did you and Judi Dench get off with each other during the filming of that? Was there anything going on? I think I might have.
Again,
yeah.
I don't like to talk. Nothing like that happened. I mean, she gave me one hand job in the car.
It's boring, though, isn't it? People think acting's an interesting job. There's a lot of sitting around doing nothing, and
all that I did in between all the takes. All she wanted me to do was do impersonations of Jimmy Savile, and she said, "Don't tell anyone I like you to." She said, "Don't tell anyone I like to do impersonations of Jimmy Savile, please." And I go, and I go, "Say what?" I've got a skeleton key to Stoke Mandeville Hospital.
It's a good job you move. You know, you have more arrows to your bow, strings to your bow, isn't it? Because like most of the, I mean, about Frank Spencer's the only one you can still do that isn't in that so far.
No, it's funny. All the people I used to impersonate have all been arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true, because I mean,
makes me wonder if you were doing it, and then they're filming that.
You mean when I bring up girls and do deep breathing when I go?
Can you tell what it is yet?
It's my penis. That's in case you didn't get that joke. I know. There's a lot of who else is there? Yeah, I mean, there's lots of. But I mean, remember the when Bill Roach?
Yeah.
Was it? But the defendants in that case kept calling him Ken Barlow in court. Yeah, Ken Barlow came up to me, touched me bum in the lift.
Time for another emergency question. I might go old school. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock? And did people cheer as you did?
It's funny, I've got two dogs and they clearly can.
Yeah.
Suck their own, not mine. You were going to jump on that, weren't you? You were like,
yo, you mean you're...
That's the headline in the Daily Mail tomorrow. That's sorted.
Yeah, no, they'll say Coogan has dog suck his cock in inverted commas. Like, just a quote. Right. Yeah. No, I don't, by the way, just for the record. Hardly ever.
Danger of biting with the dog
exactly,
as well.
It's yeah, kinda, exactly. It's not
I
worth,
imagine.
It's not worth the risk. It's not worth having to make something up at A&E, you know. I fell on my dog's mouth. I think the idea occurs to you when you're younger.
Yeah.
That might be, you know, worthwhile. But it's just not possible. I mean, have I tried? I probably did bend over once when I was about 40 and thought this is not going to happen. But it is possible. I mean, there's that old Mike Harding joke, isn't there? About I'm deliberately stealing his material here. Where he said he was at his girlfriend's house and the dog was licking its own balls, and he said it was a bit embarrassing because he was with his girlfriend and they were all staring at the dog licking its own balls, and he tried to break the ice by saying, "Well, I wish I could do that." And his girlfriend's mother said, "Give him a chocky bicky, I might let you."
You are quoted as saying, "I'm not Mother Teresa, but I'm not Frank Both either." What other people aren't you?
And there's a series of slightly faded 1970s sports presenters that I'm also not.
You're not loads of people.
Yeah, I know. I just chose to randomly.
And have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street, the film, the movie?
Yeah, I have.
Does that, because I imagine you, if you...
What, have I done bad things?
Did you look at that and go, yeah?
I was like,
I've thrown a dwarf at a dartboard. I've made a woman shave her head for $10,000.
I've never made a woman shave her head. You know, I have done cocaine, and I'm not very proud of that. Feel the silence. but I don't anymore, and I don't drink or anything now. But yes, I had an excessive time. But I actually, two things. One, I think The Wolf of Wall Street is fucking rubbish.
Yeah, that is the main problem.
That's the main problem.
It's overlong.
It's overlong. It's like, it says at the end. He got out of prison and he's still being a bastard. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't want him to get out of prison, I want him to stay there forever.
Well, nobody really gets any. A couple of them die, but are not off the bar screen. But none of them get any repercussions. He goes to cushy prison.
I don't care about anyone. This film's too long. It's just a load of rubbish.
And there's a bit where the policeman who caught him is sitting on the tube.
And you're supposed to think that, look at him, that policeman is really moral. He gets the tube every day. Ha 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 ha, what a loser. I just hated it. Yeah. But as regards some of the things that occurred, I'm not Mother Teresa. But then again, I'm not Frank Bob.
Poor old Frank Bob. At the time, I came up with a joke. Most people don't know who he is. But no one ever laughed at this joke, but I'll do it now and hope it gets a laugh 25 years later. Too many cokes spoil the boff. Come on!
That's good, though.
That's good. A fucking good joke. Thank you.
I tell why you went to that posh university.
No one liked it at the time. I'll do another emergency question. I want to know about. This is a good one. Where do you get your crazy ideas from?
From inside my head.
Okay.
Someone said you just say from some woman who lives in Southport. Do you really want to know the answer to that question?
No,
good. Fuck for that.
I was very rude to both Ted Rogers and Don Estelle when I was a teenager, when I saw them in real life. Were you ever rude to a celebrity
I don't think you should bully people who are defenceless. And I would put Ted Rogers and Don Estelle in camp, especially as they're dead. I think you should take the piss out of people who are empowered and think they're it, like the Top Gear presenters, for example. So people who've got a bit too cocky and confident, they're the people you should, and people who've got money and power, you You should take the piss out of them. You shouldn't take the piss out of blind beggars.
That's a very rude way to talk about Don Estell. He was short. He was short-sighted for sure. But he sold his tapes in Woolworths. A good and honest man. So, well, let's talk a little bit about Alan Partridge, my creation, and that I made up. You seem to have had a. Because the difficult thing about creating such a massive hit is that, you know, you feel like you want to escape it and do other things. Mm-hmm. And it felt like you wanted to do that for a while, but you seem there's a renaissance of it, and you don't seem to be have that worry about it anymore.
Well, I mean, the answer to the question is it is a bit of an albatross, but it's what they call a high class problem. You know, when I was at school, I wanted to do a character like John Cleese and be like do something like 40 Tales. That wouldn't be great to do a really funny character that everyone thinks is really funny. And I did that, yeah. Alan Partridge, with your help, thanks. And then you sort of think, well, then when you've done it, you think, well, what do I do now? And the thing is, even though it was successful, it still feels like I still like it. I still like, even though it stops people considering me for other things sometimes, or it did. I still like the character. So when I wasn't doing it, I would still be walking around, you know, in a slightly mad way, looking in shop windows, thinking, I wonder what Alan would think of that. So I thought, I want to do some more. You know? Yeah. And also, when you write him, you get sick of him. When I wrote with Armando, you get. It's like literally being in a room with Alan Partridge for months. It's not. In the end, it stops being nice. It's not funny anymore. It's just like in the room with a dick. And then eventually, you think, well, I don't want to do it. And then, when you go away, you think, oh, I quite miss him. He was a bit of a dick, but he was quite funny. And so then you come back to him. But what happened was I got lumbered with him. So I wanted to do. I wanted to do something different, but not get rid of Alan. And the more I did a few different things over the years with varying degrees of success. Probably the most satisfying thing was work with Michael Winterbottom. I did a few films with him,
yeah.
And that sort of stopped me going a bit mad and turning into Alan. but now since I did Philomena, which I did before Alan Partridge. When I did that, before the film, for the Al Partridge film, I did for the meeting. And since that's been successful, it's opened other doors to me to do dramas now. Dramas that have got a bit of comedy in them and things that move people and touch people. Not like Rolf Harris touch people, but touch people on an emotional level.
He sometimes did that as well.
Sometimes you touch them on an emotional level, you get to touch them. Yeah. Physically, yeah.
Just check their birth certificate.
Just check the birth certificate. I do. Yeah. I won't take a photocopy. Anyway, the thing now. But when you do, I'm more likely to go back to Alan when I'm successful at other things. I'm more likely to actually do more Alan, if you like. You know what I mean?
But the recent stuff as well, even though the early stuff was obviously fantastic, the bits I wrote especially, the recent bits. I think the autobiography, which I read and listened to on the audio version of it, yeah. I don't think that's made me laugh more than anything else. I think that you've done with Alan Partridge is just. It's
very,
so
very dense with laughs. I'm really pleased with that, because when you get offered to do a book, you know, what happens is, one thing that motivates you to make sure it's funny, well, first of all, Rob and Neil Gibbons, I always say the Gibbons write the material, people think I'm talking about monkeys. They're called Rob and Neil Gibbons, they're brothers, and they write, they're the sort of chief writers now on Partridge, and they're really great. And when we got the book, I didn't want to do that thing. You know, you get, sometimes you think, they get a book, you get a book deal, and it's a way of making quick money, and it can be cynical. And also, I always imagine sometimes that there's loads of people. Well, sort of rubbing their hands together in this country, especially. There's lots of people who love what you do. There's also a few people rubbing hands together going, "Oh, I hope it's shit." and it's always nice to disappoint those people.
Yes.
So we just made sure it was really, really funny, and also made it seem really real. The problem is when you write comedy about characters that have been around for a long time. A lot of internet nerds who'll say, "Ah, you got that wrong. You said in 1992 that he shopped at Woolworths, and he's saying you to jump on Asda." And so what you have to do is, we had a researcher who made sure, go back through all the things to make sure it was all, you know, all stacked up.
But yeah. I suppose it's kind of, as well, when you were first doing it, you were like in your mid-20s, And so yeah. you're an older man and a middle-aged man, and that's more.
It's more. Do you know when I was younger, like when I used to do gigs with you in at universities and stay in halls of accommodation, I seem to remember. I started doing characters. I was doing impersonations then, and a bit after that, I started doing characters. All the characters I did. I did like Paul and Pauline Calf and some this safety officer guy and they were all really middle-aged people. And I remember thinking when I was younger, thinking, "Well, I can't wait to be middle-aged because then I'll be able to do. They'll look realistic and rather than it's sort of, I look at my body now when I was 26 with my hair combed over and a moustache. I'm going, "Oh, yeah, I'm middle." It's a bit rubbish. So.
Well, and also, I think there's more tragedy to it when you're 25. You don't, you can look at older people and go, idiots.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you are sort of in your late 40s or whatever, you understand your own tragedy.
Well, in a way that you're right there. But what's happened with Alan is, Alan was somebody we used to laugh at, go ha 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 ha. He's really funny. Let's all take the piss out of him. And then as the years have gone on, and I've become closer to him.
Yeah.
And sort of merged a bit in half into him, like a sort of. Like the fly when you're in the pod. Sort of half of me is Alan Partridge. And you start to become defensive and sort of think, well, actually, I don't want to laugh at him. And so a lot of the humour is sort of, we're a bit more compassionate about Alan now than we were 20 years ago. So we try to sort of feel sorry. People feel a bit of sympathy for him now, whereas years ago they just laugh at him. Now they go, oh dear, poor Alan. And that's kind of because. It's sort of a bit more. It's probably become a bit more like me, and also when you're middle aged, you're sort of. It's part of the catharsis. You sort of laugh at yourself, and things Alan says are sometimes things I think secretly, but don't go. Oh, you can't say that. So I'll say it as Alan, and it's quite enjoyable.
Like what, Steve? What are the things that you?
I'll leave that for people to.
Because he says some awful things, so I'll just assume it's the most awful ones, is what you actually.
It is.
Unless you point them out. Because we're doing these characters, it's very. When I knew you when we were younger, I thought it was very difficult to get to the heart of you as a person, and like a lot of character actors. I think you're very much you're sort of the Peter Sellers of our generation, which is like a massive compliment in lots of ways. But
I'm not nasty to my kids.
No, that's good.
Or indeed a cunt.
No, but he was also he was a bit of an enigma as a person, as a human being. Of the character.
Well, I didn't know quite who early on. I didn't really. I suppose it didn't really have much of a personality. I just liked to do funny voices.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't really have any opinions or anything. I just liked doing funny voices. I'd never had a proper job, and I like to do. High-bound characters, but as the years have gone on, I've developed a personality.
But I find it sort of fascinating with the different levels of success that people have in their careers, and some deservedly so, and some undeservedly so, and also a lot of people in this business can become very focused on the job and not on their. Home life and whatever. So you've obviously got a daughter and
I've got a daughter, so and a girlfriend, two dogs,
and two dogs who lick their own cocks.
Yeah, cocks. The thing is, I don't hang around with celebrities.
Yeah,
I really don't do that, and I sort of well, a lot of people do, and I understand why some people do because they think well. They understand what it's like to be famous. I don't do that because I just don't feel comfortable doing that.
I don't think it is that though either. I don't think that's why they do it.
Why do you think?
I think they do it because it's like it's an affirmation thing. It's like look,
well,
see,
people say
no one liked me at school, but look at me now with Robbie Williams.
I feel slightly uncomfortable about it. It's not like an invitation. I remember an invitation to Elton John's birthday party once. I thought. Why is he inviting me to his birthday party?
Odd. It's odd to invite. You know, you wouldn't do it as a, a regular person. You wouldn't invite just a another builder in another town. Yeah. Better invite to my birthday.
I know it's very odd. So I don't. So I do. I do try and do. You know, I try and just do my own. I do get the train into London, go to the office every day when I'm writing, and then. And you know, I'm not saying I'm a horny-handed son of toil, but I just try. I think it's
You know, are you would you say you are a ham-handed son?
A ham-fisted daughter of something. Yeah. So it's important to have a life and not be.
Are you happy in yourself, Steve?
I'm a lot happier than I was because I'm doing really well.
You are doing very well.
And that helps.
It is. I imagine it does.
And, come on. No. Don't say that.
Have you got your own podcast in a 400-seater theatre that fills up some weeks, not other weeks? Kind of inexplicably.
No. But I've forgotten the question now.
No, that wasn't what the man... We can rewind and listen to it later and go, that's what it was. You're doing a lot more writing just at the moment. You're doing some writing and
I'm trying to write films, some more films.
Yeah.
And produce films, get some other people to write them.
Yeah.
So I don't have to. And a bit of acting in some things that I haven't written. Just try to mix it up a bit, try and do different. But I'm very happy because I'm doing what I wanted to do, which is I love comedy, but I'm more interested in using comedy to make people think about things rather than just laugh. Laughing is good, but if you laugh and think at the same time, it's better.
I agree with that. I think you're sort of moving, because this seems to happen a decade ago to a lot of, and someone would be successful in the UK, and then they go to America, and they do kind of much broader comedy.
Well, I sort of did that for a bit, and it was a mistake. It was I did. You know, I was in a thing called The Other Guys, and I played Wheel Number 5, and you sort of, and you know, other it's. And I had an agent who said, you need to be in a comedy with Vince Vaughn. And I fired him because I just realised I was sort of doing what I hated.
Yeah.
Because other people... When I did Philomena, I spotted a story in a newspaper and I thought, well, that would make a really interesting film. And the first time I did something where I ignored the advice.
Yeah.
I just did my own thing. And I thought, well, from now on, I'm going to just do what I think I want to do. And also, if you do what you believe in, and you fail, then you've still got a bit of dignity. If you sell your soul and still fail, then you're really fucked.
You get lots of money and stuff, though, I
imagine. Not if you fail.
No.
No money or self-respect. I mean, I've got a lot of self-respect. My self-respect is for sale, but it's very, very high price.
And did you feel that putting Jackie Chan in Around the World in 80 Days was...
I'd done Michael Winterbottom films to please people, but then I had to satisfy my own muse. So I thought working with Jackie Chan would really stretch myself and would be, because I think people have to suffer for their art.
Because I read that book and I thought it needs more kind of martial arts and stuff in it. That's why. It's all very well going around the world in 80 days, but where's the fighting?
He had someone on set who peeled grapes for him. A woman's job to peel grapes for him.
Because
I thought
it
was terrible.
Too weak
and
to
then
do
I tasted
himself.
Them and thought, that's really nice.
Do you think the person who peels his grapes goes home and thinks, I have self-respect? I'm Jackie Chan's grape peeler. That's my role in life.
Well, probably not.
No. It's an interesting job to have. Okay, well, we're near at the end because I'm conscious of you having to get trains.
I am. I've got to go back to Brighton.
He's going on a train. If you go and stand in the station, you can get him. I don't like kill him.
Yeah. If you get the train to Brighton, I'll be getting on it, and I'll say hello, and then you'll go and sit in standard, and I'll go and sit in first class. I like to mix with real people.
Have you ever bumped into
stockbrokers?
Have you ever bumped into Nick Cave at Brighton Station?
I've bumped into Nick Cave a lot on the train.
Because I sat next to him in Brighton Station.
It's funny. You do actually. I tell you once, I bumped into Chris Eubank on the first class compartment. Yeah. He went. He leant forward. He went. You're a very funny man, aren't you? some people think so. Yes, I thought you were. I thought you were a comedian because of the way you were eating your sandwich. I wasn't eating it in a funny way. Anyway, yes, I know. I'm just saying. It's really odd.
I bumped into Tam Dyle the other day, and he... No, he just made that up so he could do the impression. That's bullshit.
That's honestly the truth. So you know all the famous people I've seen on Trains to Brighton?
Yeah.
Victor Spinetti, no longer with us.
Oh, yes.
Wycliffe Stover.
Vera Lynn.
Vera Lynn, saw her. Dora O'Brien.
Okay.
Dora
O'Brien. Is it Ghost? Is it Ghost Train? You're on from the 1920s.
It is. It actually it goes all the way to the pier and then goes like that. Yeah. And anyone else?
Chris Eubank's an interesting person because he's sort of I'd forgotten about him and then because he was everywhere for a while when he was good at boxing.
Well, he did actually come up to me and say, "Do you think I would be good at acting?" And I said, "Within your range." Yeah, you know, a boxer with a cane and a monocle, definitely first in line.
Could play himself in the Chris Eubank story. He said he could never. He was so masculine he could never produce a female child. That's what I remember about him saying.
Really?
He said he would never have a daughter because he was too. He was so masculine.
Really?
He didn't really understand genetics.
Chris Eubank.
He was good. He was good at boxing, and he then did have a. He did have a female child. That's my favourite thing about Chris Eubank. I was going to ask if you've ever seen a ghost, but we've established that you have on the special Harry Potter train to Brighton. You get the celebrity... There's a different train that goes to Brighton. It's just the celebrity one. You have to go walk through platform to get there. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot in real life?
No, I haven't. No, I don't believe in that.
Well, it doesn't matter. You have to believe in it.
So there was an episode. There was an episode of the $6 Million Man.
Yeah.
That had Bigfoot in it. Do you remember
that? I do. Yeah.
I think it was in two parts.
I think you're right. It was. Have you ever seen a $6 Million Man?
No.
In real life.
No.
Probably.
But you know, bionics. I mean, are becoming. It's becoming real, isn't it?
Yeah. So Bigfoot might be real.
Oscar Pistorius. He's got the bendy. False legs.
We go now. Let's do the impression of Oscar Pistorius. Shall I do one?
I couldn't find my Boeing legs, my lady.
I can do an impression of Oscar Pistorius.
Across the bedroom.
Shall I do Oscar Pistorius? This is my Oscar Pistorius. That's him failing to ask her if she's in the bathroom.
It's good that you can make comedy out of tragedy.
It is. How long is that trial going to go? Why don't they understand about the Oscar Pistorius thing? Right, they had the trial, they had a pre-trial, they had the trial. He had to go away to hospital a bit because he was a bit tired. Then they came back and then they said, right, yeah, we've got the... You're going to have to come back in a month and we'll tell you what the sentence is going to be. And then I thought, oh, today will be the sentence. And then that was all day and more witnesses coming in. How long is it going to go on for? Are they going to eke this out? Disgraceful. Just tell me what's happening to Oscar Pistorius.
I agree.
Steve Coogan, tell me. You know, you're all celebrities together. Well, we're nearly at an end. I'll let you go in a second. I feel like there was something else I should have talked to you about. Fuck it. you're not on Twitter.
No, I don't do... Well, I'm a bit scared because I think I'll say something that I'll lose my temper and say something and then have to, you know, apologise.
Yeah, it's all right. Don't apologise, that's what I do.
I know, but then what if you say something that was really mean and you actually want to apologise, but you don't really want
say
to?
Say something meaner.
But if everyone was like that, we'd live in a horrible world, wouldn't we?
That's what Twitter is at the moment. you'll eventually end up in... You'll end up in prison. People will see you go, oh... I thought they were a cunt, but they're just terribly sad people.
Yeah.
okay, look, I think we will. I want to end on a big question, and I can't think of one. It's kind of it's a downside on being an interviewer. When you, if your penis could travel in time, but just your penis through a little hole like that, where would you send your penis? It would still be attached to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not just going to go off and then your penis is flopping around on the floor somewhere like come out of an ocean.
Okay.
It's going to be attached to you.
Okay.
But then from the perspective of where it is in time, it's just like a floating or
But I can feel the sensations that happen to the penis.
Yeah, so you could go anywhere in time and do anything you want.
Anything I wanted to.
Yeah, with the consent of the other person involved.
But how would that? But how would that be arranged?
You'd pass a little. You'd have to put a.
Can I write something on the penis saying, "Can I have sex with you"? And then she tapped it twice. It would be a she, by the way. So I'm not gay.
You wouldn't know it. Well, it's like a time-travelling glory hole. Anything could be on the other side. There could be a dog on the other side of that.
Well, no. But if I've got choice, then I'd probably have sex with someone like Brigitte Bardot in 1955.
Okay. She's still alive, isn't she?
I know. So I still go back in time. No.
What's wrong with Brigitte Bardot now?
She's too old.
Wow. There's nothing. The one thing worse than a paedophile is a gerontophile, Steve Coogan. That's quite a specific. A few people get checking their dictionaries. They're going to be laughing in about 5 minutes of that.
I'm with Tony Curtis. I could never go out with anyone old enough to be my wife.
Right.
Ooh, sorry.
I would criticise you for it, but my wife is 13 years younger than I am, so I'm slightly stuck on. I would go. Yeah, that's. You going out with young women just because you can. oh no, it's turned nasty at the end. But maybe we're getting on okay. It's just the audience hate us. Just the audience have turned
anger,
against us.
Anger.
are you going to bring back Tony Farino?
Oh God, do you know? Interestingly enough. No, is the answer.
Okay.
But when I was doing that, my A&R guy was Simon Cowell.
Wow.
He was the person who was handling me.
Yes.
And the person who taught me to do the choreography for me was Bruno. Bruno Thingioni. From Strictly Come Dancing or whatever. And he also taught me to walk like Pauline Calf. Because he said to me, "Steve, you look great. You look fantastic. You look like, but you walk like a bloke." He said, "You have to walk like this, you know." And he did this sort of female walk up and down, wiggling his bum. And I practiced it, practiced walking one foot in front of the other, and 1 foot literally in front of the other, sort of wiggling. He said, "Now I said I want you to walk at all the things that I've taught you. I want you to walk up and down, but inside your head, I want you to think. I want you to say to yourself, I want you to fuck me." That was his professional advice.
It worked. Did you give him? Did he get any percentage?
I gave him £50 in cash.
He went off counting it. He invented Pauline Calf. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a massive round of applause for my guest, Steve Coogan?
Thank you.
We'll be back after the interval for more for you. Bye bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.